is a little bit different. We're going to go live today. We're live on YouTube while we're doing this episode of Talking Married Life and Bank Trapping. I am the Bank Trapper, and this is my beautiful wife.
The team of the banker.
And so what we're going to be discussing is how every decision you make ties to commerce, and how in a relationship these things matter. And so, you know, like we had discussed in episode 12, I think it was, about should you do finances together or separate. One thing that people don't understand, that there is no aspect of your life that doesn't tie to commerce. Every decision you make has commerce involved in it, whether it's what kind of bread you want to give to your family to eat for sandwiches, to what color you're going to wear today, to what do you call yourself, how do you represent your family, and you know, even when it comes to decisions on getting the jabby jab, you know, we can't say exactly the whole thing because, you know, YouTube likes to pull them videos down, and we ain't trying to get taken off of here quite yet. You know, once we get, once Odyssey gets everything figured out and we're going there on ours, then we don't have a heck of a rest, you know. But there was a story, and I don't know, should I read the article, you think?
Oh, we could just discuss it because it's not really like a... It's just saying what they just talk about the situation, what anything would happen.
So there was a court case where an insurance company didn't pay out for their whole life policy because the insured had got the jabby jab. And this was in France, but even though that was in France, the West all runs off of the same legal system, pretty much the world, under the maritime and admiralty laws. And what they do there sets a precedence for everywhere else, especially in the West. And so what they ruled it as, which is crazy, is that they ruled it as a suicide. The person went and got, you know, poked up for what they thought was something that would protect them. And they ruled it as a suicide when they died because of the adverse reactions. Now, whether you feel that is good, bad, whatever, you know, that's not really the point right now. It's just more about, you know, really reading the fine line and understanding that, you know, in a situation like this, a lot of people just have life insurance just for the sake, not even for the sake of banking with, but just as protection in case something happens to them and something happened to somebody and they couldn't protect their family, you know, like, and so, you know, bringing that home, like, how would you have felt if I had did that and you were against it and then something happens to me and now you don't get paid out?
The paid out portion, I mean, isn't really the fine line about it. It's just like, you know, being married, and if I say, okay, I'm against this, but he's not against it, and, you know, he, you know, does make that decision knowing that that could affect our family, by him being gone, as well as not being able to be taken care of when he's gone. Now, that's what I would have a problem with.
No, that's understandable. I mean, but, I mean, how many people do you think actually, like, believe that it's you trying to hypnotize me on live with them pretty eyes? How many people do you think actually would have thought of that as a commerce decision when they did it, though?
None, because a lot of people, so I'm just going to kind of go back a little bit, because a lot of people make decisions and they don't think, and they don't even read. You don't read the contracts that you sign. And so when you first set up an insurance policy, a life insurance policy, there is a clause in there that says that they will not pay out that death benefit if there is a suicide within that first 2 years. There are also companies that will not cover a suicide at all. And so when we are making decisions because we are pressured to make the decisions, one, we have to be stronger than that. And two, if we're really being pressured to do something, is it really a good thing that you're doing? Because when you're giving the opportunity to say yes or no to something based off of your beliefs and, you know, everything that encompasses you to make your decision, your final decision for something, it shouldn't be something that's pressed on you and, you know, you have to say yes or you can lose your whole life. And the fine print on when you're making, you know, those types of decisions to your body is, okay, what am I putting in my body? What's in this? Okay, so what are the views of the elite? Are they taking this? Are they putting this in their bodies? How do they take care of themselves and their family? And so when you decide to do that kind of thing, and you go back around and you are like, okay, I want to start doing the right thing. Well, that thing that you decided on could affect the thing that you're trying to do, because now you're trying to do right. So, yeah.
That answered your question?
No, it did.
Okay.
And so I think that for that person's family, that's a tragedy right there, because I imagine that when they made the decision, they were thinking they were making a decision that was going to best benefit the health in the long run in all situations, trying to be, you know, a good person all the way around. But doing that caused an issue that had permanent ramifications, and it's a situation that didn't need to happen. And so that's another thing that you have to be aware of too, though, is just, you know, thinking like, okay, even though I'm afraid, even though this may this and that, what are some of the long-term implications? And I know for me, I was always a planner, I was willing to play high stakes consequences that didn't make sense. And so there's unfortunately some lessons that once you make the decision, you don't get an opportunity to come back from. And as a man, I have to think about those things as well too, you know, like, hey, you know, will doing this actually be worth the risk or the reward? You know, what's my risk to reward ratio on this situation? It's no different in anything that you do, you know, and again, talking about commerce, every decision has a risk and a reward ratio to it, you know? Mm-hmm. Let's say you're trying to do the right thing and you're out, you know, you think you're doing the right thing, you hustling and grinding, but you know, you're not all the way in the streets and you got insurance and you've started a business and this and that, but you hit a lick on somebody. Well, in the act of a felony, you know what I'm saying? Your insurance company doesn't have to pay out either. Mm-hmm. Or a lot of these rappers, you know, are getting smart and they're using life insurance policies to bank with, but they're still riding dirty and doing a lot of stuff. And so all that money that you put into your policy thinking that your family gonna be straight if you're out there doing what you're doing, that's wiggle room for them to get out of their contracts because you're not thinking in the long term. And so, what are some of the things that have really been interesting to you when it comes to, you know, your thoughts on how every decision is a commerce decision, and what are some of the things that you've been doing or wanting to do that tie to that and everything going on?
One of the things that I do like about the position of working in commerce is that we have a lot of different options. And I say options in a way where you can choose, like let's say for banking, you can choose how you would like to bank. You can bank through other products, but you know, doing your due diligence and knowing what you're doing, of course, but that, and then as well as how a lot of things in the space like technology and finances and that is finances. Real estate is finances. Just, yeah.
I'd probably say for me, what's going on with Web3 is a real big one. I think too many of our people are still like really focused on buying crypto for the sake of appreciation in the sense of, you know, kind of like, you know, what made me think about it is just with the real estate, like you said too. And so we're looking to buy a coin to flip a coin, but we're not realizing that these coins power technology. Or that these blockchains have other inherent use cases that give their coins and their tokens a certain value. And so one of the ones I really like that everybody knows about is Ethereum. And there's this NFT aspect of it that goes beyond art that ties to, and it goes to your identity. And so, I personally have bought my domain names and my ideas and my thoughts, and it allows me to have forever ownership of who I am as a person before somebody else allows takes ownership over me and my identity. Because the moment we're born, if we're already not properly registered the right way and everything, we're already losing our identity the moment we're born, because our parents transfer ownership of who we are to the government. And so the fact that I'm able to directly receive payments using my Web3 crypto domains that are run on the Ethereum blockchain is really like really, really groundbreaking to me. Like, that's one of the best, like, out of all the NFTs we have and that we've gotten and stuff, like, those are one of the main ones we've got, is all the stuff that ties to identity and some more that we do plan on getting. What's been, anything you want to add, what you've been thinking about when it comes to,
the importance.
The importance or anything, even like anything that you think our listeners would want to hear, any questions that you personally had that you think, even if we talked about it before, like any questions that you think they might have about it.
Well, I just want to say that kind of just share my experience with identity and the importance, because a lot of us we've all grown up and we get to our adult years and we're like, who are we? Who am I? And for me, growing up, by the time I was eight, my mom had moved us to Colorado for the first time. And then from there, everything just kind of went downhill. And so we moved back and forth, back and forth. And so I remember trying to make friends and trying to experiment who I am. I remember I had a tomboy phase that I thought I was. I remember I had a goth whatever phase, because I was trying to experience or experiment and figure out who I was. And so it got to the point where my mom wouldn't let us experience and do things. Like, she was very strict and, yeah, strict and controlling. And so and there was really no reason to be, but coming fast forward to my adult years, or my teenage years, I had a child early at 17, and from there I literally had to learn how to get a job. He pushed me to get my first job. Yeah, he did push me to get my first job. But I had to become an adult. I had to grow up even faster than what I was supposed to. At them ages, you're supposed to be a child and be able to experience and experiment and things like that safely. And so now, in my adult years, this past few years, I thought that I knew what I liked, when really I would just say I'm a picky person. And even though I didn't know what I liked or what I wanted, I was still just considering myself picky. And I wouldn't experience or try new things because I just out of fear and just really not knowing what I like to do, because I never really, my mom never really took us to travel. We didn't do anything. And so these past few years of going through the journey that we've been going through, converting to being Muslim, changing my name to Fatima, and now getting into the tech field and financial field that I've always wanted, like since I've actually started like working with after my first job, and being able to go on some college tours and stuff to see what careers that were out there. And the one that stuck out to me the most was cybersecurity. And so I didn't get to start cybersecurity when I wanted to, just because I was very unstable. I was by myself with a baby and no support. So I just like was trying to make it. So I got to the point where I was just trying to live. And now I am I am becoming successful and, you know.
What were some of the big things that you needed that helped you find your identity, for somebody who's looking to understand their identity, even to claim it and submit it into something that would be permanent, like the blockchain? Because I think that's when people that, like how people look at Twitter and Facebook, and how those, they like, man, you know, these pictures don't go away and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, now with the blockchain, you know, at least on Facebook and stuff, you can kind of delete the picture, get rid of it and stuff like that. But on the blockchain, once it's there, it's there. And so what are some ways that you would talk about, you know, learning to come into who you are in the right way?
First, I'd say stop being fearful. Like, once I started opening myself up more and stopped being afraid of actually trying and actually like facing the truth of things, then that's when I was able to actually start becoming into my identity, started to come into my identity. because a lot of us, we operate and make decisions based out of fear. Oh, I'm not going to do this. But why? Because especially I'm afraid. Yeah. Like, we've been through so many traumatic experiences, and the traumatic experiences that we've seen our parents go through, that we're like, no, I'm not even going to do that. But why? So that's one of the things that I ask myself when I say, oh, I don't like that. I ask myself, but why? Like right after I say that I don't like something, I think about it, but I didn't even try that. So why don't I like it? So that's one of the things that I do to help open myself up more, because if I question myself before he because he always questions me. He's like, but you didn't even, why don't you like that? You didn't even try it. So I just ask myself those same questions before he asks them.
I remember when you first, you know, it's something small, but for a lot of people, that's a big step is, you know, just trying different foods. And when you first tried sushi for the first time, it's just crazy how we can have a fear of even just, you know, food, you know.
I thought I was gonna get sick, but they have the little the
wasabi.
The wasabi and all that you put in it. I'll just love me some sushi.
And I mean, I think for me, you know, one of the things that's been hard too with with the situation of identity in the sense, because you know I didn't always have the most comfortable, you know, experiences and just, you know, instantly know myself. I had to kind of learn, or not kind of, I did, you know, like my dad got indicted and went to the feds when I was 8 or 9. And all the kind of men that my mom brought into the house, definitely weren't good men. And I had to learn how to be a man on my own. And I'm the oldest as well. And so usually the oldest is the experiment a lot of times. And I think that was one of the things that did help me is that, you know, even still to this day, if I'm afraid of something, to me, that means I need to conquer it. And that's one of the things that really brought me to liking crypto more, because I think about the times when I had learned about it before and fear kick in and I don't get engaged in it, and thinking about all the opportunity cost, you know, like hesitation, you know? So talking about how everything is about commerce, just to hesitate on something, like if I would have hesitated on talking to her, you know, we wouldn't be married. I'd probably be dead for real, because I never thought about really changing my lifestyle, because I was definitely one of the more successful people at doing what I was doing. And if I would have hesitated on talking to her because she was walking down the street, I could have hesitated just a couple of minutes and she would have hit the corner and that would have been it, because she might have went into a house, might have gone, who knows, anything could have happened. Talked to somebody else and that was it. And so, but how would that be a commerce situation for me though, is that we end up having 2 children. And so that's enriching in itself, but as well as I gotta pay out and water these seeds with my time, my money, my blood, sweat, and tears. As well, you know, she was very young when we got together. I was young too, but she was very young. And it was having to raise her in a sense as well. And so you can think of, you know, all the different things that come along with that. And I think that one of the biggest changes that's helped us with hitting a lot of our goals and being in positions that a lot of people aren't in, like the fact that we have over 6 months worth of savings put away. Majority of people don't have that. Majority of people, I think it went up some. They said because of the pandemic, we've reached levels of savings that we haven't seen in America in decades. But I think that on average, the amount of savings is still only like $3,000. And that's not even most people's bills in a month. So if $3,000 is a record savings level, you know, when you're seeing a lot of these people pushing Jags and stuff, like there's a dude that works where I'm at and he has a banging ass vet. It's a fairly new vet. And he is just one position higher than I am. And so our pay grade is only like about $4 difference. I don't even think it's four. I want to say it's like a $3 difference. But for me personally, I couldn't work where I'm working at and in good conscience drive a Corvette. That would be a terrible decision on my part, and it would show that I have some kind of issue somewhere with my identity. Because to feel that it's okay to be present at this kind of job, where especially he works hours, boy, he put in. It's okay to work. I, for my own stuff, like after I get off of work, I'm working right now. What we're doing, you know, and talking in this podcast and putting out content and stuff. I put in a lot of hours too, but to put in a whole lot of hours to somebody else's legacy at a dead end job. That's entirely different.
Giving your life away just to have that Corvette.
You're giving your life away, you know? And so it really is crazy because now how much opportunity cost is he losing in a situation to where if he would have been taking that and putting it into the Web3 situation, which we're still very, very early to, how much more could he have done? All the different opportunities, all the different ways to help mine crypto for a lot of these Web3 technologies and different things like that, that he could be earning versus putting out, you know? So.
That's lost opportunity cost.
All kinds of stuff, just money out of the interest. You know? And he's a young dude too. So yeah, his insurance is high, sports car, you know, like. There's a lot to that. Yeah. I don't know how it will, because I mean, it's not like we ain't necessarily been in somewhat of a similar situation ourselves, because when we were more into that thing, trying to look a certain way, it wasn't too long ago when we had like 5 cars.
Yeah.
A Tacoma with a lift kit and purple wrap on it. I understand the mindset. And that's why, you know, being able to shake the shackles of something like that and to be here in this position, I can see how different it is, you know. And so really like understanding that there's a better way to display your identity and figure out who you are and ways to generate income off of this, you know, purchasing land in the metaverse and naming that land after yourself, you know, so many different opportunities. And if you get good land, now you can lease that land out. You know, they're doing digital leases now. And you have something that you can secure that is a representation of your family and your family's name.
And so I guess the last thing for the podcast would be the guy in the bank. The 32,000.
Oh, yeah. You want to talk about that one first, start on?
That's great. So what we talked about today is like literally kind of an example. It is actually an example of why we need to claim our identities, and we need to make sure that we're protected all around and make sure that our money is not just going to just anybody And I'm saying anybody, because these banks are actually people's names. These are actual people. These banks are a part of people's legacies. JP Morgan, that's a family. Chase, that's a family. Wells Fargo.
Bank of America is not named after them, but they did it slick. It's actually an Italian family who did that. And so, but it does support the Italian community and their legacy.
And so there was a guy that had deposited a $33,000 cashier's check into his account. Bank of America account. And the right after he had left that bank, the same day they had closed that branch down. And so if we all know what a cashier's check is, a cashier's check is pretty much cash. Cashier's check is like you can get cash, redeem that for cash on the spot pretty much, because it's a cashier's check. It's not like a regular check. We have to wait for it to clear. And so they, what ended up happening was he deposited the check, they closed the branch down, and then his money was gone and never hit his account. And so he called, cashier's check can be hit your account. It's supposed to hit your account same day. And he called the bank because he didn't see that deposit in his account and he needed that money to be able to do some investment or something like that. And they said that there was nothing they could do about his money being gone. And so the fact that something like that can happen at these central banks is just it's crazy.
And he could have been controlling his whole on banking function the whole time, because I mean, if you got $33,000 in cash and you can go put that down on an investment at any point in time, you know, you could have did that from your own policy, mm-hmm. and you wouldn't have had to worry about it disappearing. Ain't none of these insurance companies closing, and there's protections that prevent them from even having the ability to close if they want to. All that stuff. And like, you know, when they talk about how the banks are too big to fail, that's even more true for insurance companies, because they're literally the bedrock of the world. And that's not an exaggeration. And so when I saw that story, it really had me thinking, like, you know, it's so huge that I understand where the banks keep their money, because the banks don't keep their money in the bank. Mm-hmm. They keep their money in insurance reserves.
Yeah.
And so that's another thing too that ties to your identity and to your legacy, because it's a part of my identity now to function and be the bank. In every way, every decision I think about, you know, I'm playing the long game as well. And I'm looking at how I do my risk and all of that. So, you know, that's definitely, you know, a crazy situation there.
And for me, it kind of made me feel like even more motivated to make sure that we have our reserves set up, because that $33,000, like, of course we'd make sure that we have more than $33,000, especially if we're putting that much into an investment. We wouldn't just put all of our money like that, like, and not leave nothing. But the fact that $33,000 could have been still sitting there, and if something like that were to happen while we're working that situation out, we still have this other, but we wouldn't be in a situation where the bank wouldn't give them that kind of control over our money to where they can put a lock on it and just make it disappear. And they do those kind of things because they hope that nobody is going to say anything, that they're not going to fight it, because they're the bank. The bank thinks that because they have the power, that which is true, because people put the power in their hands. They don't think people are gonna fight that kind of thing. When it's like, when you know how to manage your money and your financials, and you know how to deal with those kind of people or these kind of people, then it, you know, you can get, you know, of course he got his money back. You can get those type of situations resolved. But if you're a regular person and you're dealing with that kind of money and it just disappears, well, even though you are insured up to the $250,000, they still kept your money so that they can turn over profit on that money, because who knows how long it's going to take for them to really give you your money back if you do have to put in a claim for the FDIC insurance. It's not really insurance.
Not only that, is like he's still stopping the forward momentum of his money, mm-hmm. because he could have been using that money to come from his policy, put toward that investment, and win on both ends. But you know, these are the things that, you know, you get to learn from us and our experiences when we had made similar bad decisions. And really now realizing, like, hey, you know, there's smarter ways to do this, and how is the smart money moving? And you don't have to have hedge fund level money to move like a hedge fund.
It just takes understanding your financials, learning how to budget, learning how to manage your cash flow, and put in put your money in the diverse places that it needs to go, so that now you're covered in different with different products. And we're not telling y'all, we're not giving y'all any advice on what to do. We're just sharing our experiences and sharing some things that we've seen other people go through. And
because everybody's personal situation is different, and we can't necessarily take account for your personal situation, but you can use us as a guide to where you need to go.
Yep, what he said.
But thanks for tapping in with myself, the bank trapper, and my beautiful wife,
Fatima the banker.
And thank you for listening to our podcast, Mary Talking Life from Bank Trap. Peace.
We're gonna get that piece.
Get that in there.
Yeah.